Welcome to the Amazon Legends Podcast, where we have real stories about making it big on Amazon. Our guests are CEOs of large companies and entrepreneurs who became powerful sellers, also experts specializing in helping sellers, and both former and current Amazon employees who will give us an insight from behind the scenes. Here's your host, Nick Urison.
Welcome to another episode of Amazon Legends. My guest today spent decades working with big box stores and also in Amazon. And his category is toys and sporting goods and leisure categories. He's the founder and president at ACG Sales and Marketing. He's also passionate about family, faith, and Special Olympics. So everybody, meet my guest, Carlo Lucatino. Welcome to the show, Carlo.
Well, great to be here, Nick. Thank you for having me.
So, you know, when you and I met, we discussed about how you handle companies, about their representation, so to speak, because your involvement spans across multiple aspects of getting their brands in the hands of the consumer, so to speak. So you have a different kind of approach. Share with us how you launch brands, especially in these categories that you specialize in.
Yeah, Nick, I don't put all my eggs in one basket. I work with multiple, retailers. It's not just Amazon.
Yeah. So when you say, let's say that I am a manufacturer, I have my private label products, and we are recording this in October of 2022. So we're getting into the shopping season, toys, right? Everybody wants to be in their category, but very competitive. So if I'm a manufacturer with my private label products in toys category, how do you go about launching me?
Yeah, so with something like private label, we would launch in big box retailers. That's really where I would start, is launching there. And then approach Amazon later. Now, if we're talking about a branded product, and your question's about a private label, but if we're talking about branded product, then I would launch on Amazon first and then approach big box retailers later.
So tell us the difference between branded versus private label.
So branded product is a product that a company has created themselves. They come up with their own brand for that particular product. And they are selling that to across the market, right? So all big box retailers, any other retailers that they choose to sell to, they sell that brand. Private label, right, would be considered something that a particular retailer is looking to go ahead and create their own brand, right? So they create their own brand, and then we help to manufacture that brand and promote that brand within their own retailer big box store.
So if it's private label, your first step would be big box?
Yeah, well, if private label is really is geared towards that particular store, that retailer, right? So they have their own brand. So in that particular situation, then we work directly with them only. You know, they want to go ahead and promote their own brand, and that brand can't be sold somewhere else. They're only going to sell it within their own retail. I see. Shelves.
So if it's a private label, being it doesn't have any supply chain yet, they are going to be doing this for the first time, your approach is they're better off putting on the shelves of specialist stores, big box stores, and then get that going first as opposed to Amazon.
Well, exactly. So they're not going to want, so a private label is really to help to kind of keep that product within their own chain, right? If it was a branded product that goes out to the market, then we would sell on Amazon at that point. And the point with that is, and that would help to actually promote the product, right? So like I look at Amazon as not only as a reseller of product, retailer of product, but I also see them as a marketing tool. So they could really help, you know, promote that and market that brand within their own platform. And then after that's the case, then we bring it out into the marketplace to big box retailers. and other retailers outside of that too.
Okay. So as far as branded, the definition of branded, I understand branded, you mean they already have some kind of distribution.
Yes.
And they are doing B2B based distribution.
Right.
And then they have, and the product goes into the consumer's hands through their supply chain versus
right.
private label being there isn't any distribution yet.
That's right.
So at the end of the day, it's a strategy, right? Do you want to have a distribution or do you want to have always that direct to consumer approach? Because what happens is when you have distribution, it is never really safe to say, okay, you know, somebody, I'm going to be the only one selling it online, because they can easily, your resellers can sell it online at a deep discount. And before you know it, you know, because they
right.
start fighting each other on the buy box
right.
and then the price goes to the floor. So,
right.
So tell us about your take for private label / branded. Pros and cons of having a distribution network rather than just sell it yourself.
Yeah, I mean, it really, private label is always going down the road of it's driven by the retailer themselves, right? So the retailer is looking to promote their own brands within their own store chain, and they're looking, in most cases, because it's private label, they're making a little more margin on that as well, right? So you know, they're working with particular you know, suppliers. The suppliers are able to give them a better cost on that because they're exclusively selling it within their own chains, right? Now, and that's a pro, I think, for a retailer, right? But is it a pro for a supplier? Not necessarily, because then you're only selling it to the one retailer. You don't have the vast, you know, reach that you could get with a branded product. You know, you say you're gonna get your niche with that one retailer, you sell the one product to them, and it works for them. It works, and as long as you're okay with just that one retailer selling that product, that's great, right? But if you're looking to really go out and really, you know, build a brand, bring it out to a vast number of marketing retailers out in the market, then the branded approach is the way to go, because now you could put your own marketing behind that as well, right? You're selling on Amazon, that's a marketing tool, but you're also doing your own marketing behind it, the vendor is, right, I'm talking about. And so you're really able to build that brand up in the market so it becomes recognizable for a consumer to go ahead and shop it. So when they're looking for a product, let's say on Amazon, they could also find it somewhere else, and that's where the competition comes in play, right? But to your point, if you're on Amazon, you could have resellers out there. They could be driving the costs, you know, way down on the retail side of it, and it could hurt your product as well. So that's the negative side of it too. But then it's important to also have parameters in place with third-party sellers, you know, have a policy in place to say, okay, you know, you can't sell for less than this price. You know, that's called a MAP price. Or you can't sell on Amazon either. You could do that too. You could put a policy in place.
So I guess what I'm trying to figure out between the two of us is, for the listener's benefit, is what is a winning strategy? Because today there are some unavoidable facts. First of all, you have to sell online. You have to, it doesn't matter if you are a brand, private label brand, it doesn't matter. If you have a brand, if you've gone the extra step to register, trademark a brand, you have
right.
a brand. Now that brand has value, intangible value. So
sure.
the more exposure you have, the higher value. Of course, the value will be determined by your sales. So the higher the sales, the higher the value of the brand. So you're building something at that point. So what is the right distribution strategy? So there is one route that says Victoria's Secret is an example. They
mm-hmm.
only sell in their own stores. They
right.
don't officially sell to distributors or big box stores.
Right.
Their products are sold only in their stores, period. So sell direct, period. No right. big box, no distributors, no resellers, no nothing. Sell direct in your stores.
Right.
In the case of Victoria's Secret, sell direct on your website, sell direct on Amazon as the seller, period. That's one. The second strategy is right. now the other side of the spectrum is have a supply chain, have distributors, wholesalers, and right. then sell it to them. Market your product by all means, just like most, especially in like health and beauty, these luxury brands, they constantly right. you see ads on TV, but you want to buy, you go to Macy's.
Right.
So,
right.
so always have a supply, sell through a supply chain and beef up the exposure for the brand. So that's the other side of the spectrum. And then there is the middle ground.
Sure.
Middle ground is do both.
That's right.
When you start doing both, things get muddy, right? Because you sell through the supply chain and some of the players directly or indirectly end up online, start competing with you because you are also doing it.
Sure.
So give us your take. What is the best way to organize this whole operation?
I mean, it's really, it's your strategy of how big you want your company to grow, right? I think to me, you know, you can do the larger strategy, which is, you know, create a brand for your product and sell to Amazon and sell to big box and sell to other retailers. But within that, right, you have to break it down so that you can protect the brand and the pricing to go along with it, right? So create MAP strategies. I mentioned it earlier, you know, minimum MAP of advertised price. You can't sell less, let's say a problem. An item goes out for $49.99. You put a MAP policy out there is you can't sell it for less than $39.99. And if you're doing that, we're going to stop selling you inventory to resell. Okay, that's one avenue to take. You could also put policies in place, and I'm talking about resellers on Amazon more so, is that you can't sell on Amazon, and then Amazon has to follow the MAP policy as well, so you can protect the retail. And if you have those kinds of policies in place and you start selling to not only Amazon, you start selling to other e-commerce and other retailers, you protect your brand in general, right? You don't want to be the first one to go to the seller, right, with the retail pricing. So if you put some policies in place and you want to grow a large business, I think that's the best approach to take. There's a place for private label. There's a place, you know, for sure to do that. But at the end of the day, I think that's, you know, building a brand. This is what we do at ACG is we build a brand. We build brands with vendors, right? They come to us. They say, hey, we've got this product. We want to grow it. We want to build a brand with it. And so that's the approach we take is we want to go to mass market.
Okay. All right. So you mentioned a few very useful things. So MAP policy. So minimum right. advertised price. So for the listener's benefit, as the manufacturer, the owner of the brand, when you are selling to your distributors, you can put, you obviously have MSRP. So that's your suggested retail price that right. the end user pays. But you also have a MAP price. Well, what MAP does is it stops, or at least it sets the rules for in black and white that if somebody is buying from you at wholesale,
right,
they cannot sell it lower than the MAP.
That's right. Yep.
So you will find that, for example, skiing is a seasonal activity, so every year we have new skiing products come out. So obviously any brand that brings out a new skiing product does not want it sold at a deep discount, right?
Right.
At the same time, last season's items, they don't mind selling at a discount. So for the listener's benefit, MAP comes with not only a price, but also a date. That's the right way to do it. So you right. simply say to people, my item retails for $79.95. MAP is $69.95.
Right.
Until, let's say, 2023 June.
Sure.
Which means that after that, they can sell it at anything they want.
Right.
But until then, you are made. Plus, they get to make more money. So that's the first thing you mentioned. Right. So,
yeah.
The second thing you mentioned is having a fairly clearly written distribution agreement where you spell out the rights to sell. So what that's I right. recommend my clients is always just say that the rights to sell online, not just Amazon, but the rights to sell online is by approval only.
Right.
I don't say not allowed. I just say by approval only.
Sure.
And then also I have them put on in the agreement that any unauthorized online sales will be reported to marketplaces or otherwise as counterfeit.
That's right. Yeah.
So so they know immediately what the boundaries are and they know the consequences. So of course, if you, on Amazon, if you report a counterfeit, that's the end of the seller, right?
That's the end of the seller. Exactly. That's right.
So, okay, these are very good. Okay. So now that we identified the winning strategy, that definitely sell both, go after a supply chain, go after big box, put a map in place, and also put in your agreement the boundaries that the rights to sell online. Okay, so now let's discuss the order of it. So you are launching it, and you have the branded approach. You want to sell to big box, and also you want to sell online. Which one comes first?
So my approach would be to sell. First, I would sell on our own website. That's one approach. If you don't have a website for someone to reference, then you don't have a business. And nowadays, right, everybody goes to a website to see where you sent, who you are, what your brand is, where how long you've been in business. But secondly, then I would go to Amazon. I wouldn't start selling on Amazon because I mentioned earlier they're the biggest marketing tool in the U.S. You're going to do some marketing regardless of whether you do it on Amazon or you do it, through your own marketing efforts. You're going to spend money. So, to me, Amazon is not only a reseller, but it's a marketing tool. So you spend money on marketing your product because you have millions of eyes looking at it. Okay. Then after Amazon, then I would start going to big box retailers. And I say this also because the buyers are going to ask that question: where are you selling this product? Right. Well, Amazon is one of the most credible retailers in the world, right? So they're going to look on Amazon. They're going to see how much you're selling it for, because they also want to be sure that, that the item is not being severely discounted when they look at the retail. And they're also going to go to your website, and they may look at other areas, other e-commerce if you're out there as well. So that's where I would start: website, Amazon, and then big box.
Okay, so that's very smart. So as far as just one little difference in my approach, what I always tell people is if you are launching your online adventure, because that's how it is.
It's an adventure.
Never end. So if you are launching online, don't start on your website. By all means, you must have a website and you must put the products on the website.
Sure.
But don't make the transactional aspect of taking an order on your website. In other words, not Shopify sales, not, because first and foremost, fulfillment of an order is a job on its own.
It is.
If it's very little, if you're getting one or two pieces a day, it's no big deal. But even those one or two pieces, you will push back because you've got other things to do. So it's not going to get handled as promptly as it should. The customer service aspect of it. And doesn't matter if you're getting one or two orders a day. Whoever is placing an order is going to demand service. Sure. So they're going to demand, you know, they may not like it. They are going to demand the different aspects of the website. They're going to have, you know, chat support, whatever. So there's all those things. So if you are going to transact on your website, then you have to really allocate resources. So is right. that really something you want to spend time and money on at the beginning? Not really. So what I always recommend is put up your website, put your product information on the website, absolutely capture their emails, anybody that logs in. However, for purchasing it, link it to the Amazon listing. So that way, you don't have to deal with fulfillment. Right. You don't have to deal with customer service, returns. And most important, you don't have to worry about inventory management of how many pieces do we have in the main warehouse, at home, in the garage, how many at Amazon. You don't have to worry about it. You just look at one inventory, Amazon FBA inventory, and just keep replenishing it. And if it's coming partially from the website, it's okay. You can always cut off that connection. And then if you're receiving so many orders through the website, you can always say, okay, I'm going to fulfill it myself or get it 3 p.m.
Sure.
So that way it doesn't like split your attention and your resources at the beginning. So launch on Amazon, make sure your point about Amazon being a marketing channel is the perfect one. You know, you've got ready buyers looking for stuff to buy.
Right. That's so right.
Set up shop where the money is, right? So.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I hear you, Nick, on that. You know, the only thing I would say with selling on your own site is, you know, you could very much go to a third party warehouse, right, where they specialize in drop ship, and work with them on that, and they handle all the customer service, they handle all, you know, you could have them doing all of it, and yeah, there's fees involved, obviously, but you have to kind of build that into the cost in a little bit, and go from there.
So there is one other thing. So for anybody listening, really, what we're saying is, don't go pitching your product to buyers in big box stores before you start your Amazon operation. That's the bottom line. Now, I'm going to give you one other benefit of doing this. So let's assume that you launched on Amazon and you spent a few months optimizing the listing, getting the PPC campaigns going, mm-hmm. around it, got reviews, you've got now traction, you've got sales. So you're going to, if you do this launch the right way, you're going to rank up pretty quickly.
Sure. That's right.
So now at that point, you may be ready to go to the big box store. So now you go to the big box store, you sit in front of the buyer and you say, okay, I'd like you to buy this. You're basically asking them to give you a PO. Bottom line, that's the result, right?
So, that's right.
So you want a PO. And the PO is going to be for a large quantity. So for them, it's a crapshoot, right? They don't know. It's a new item. They're buying for the first time. Well, guess what? For anybody using Helium 10, if you use Helium 10 X-ray, you just ask the buyer, can you just go to Amazon and then just pull up our listing? And by using X-ray, you can show them exactly how many pieces a month your item is already selling.
That's right.
So what does that do for the buyer?
Well, it's a wonderful marketing tool, Nick. I mean, you know, and how do you sell with buyers? You know, the best way to sell to a buyer is by showing them results, right? You show them results and they see that it's ranking number one on the site, and they're selling millions of units per week or per year, right? How can the buyer say no to it, you know, at that point? You know, so it's a great way to sell the product in. You know, no longer like in the old days, I used to, you know, sell the big box retailers first because Amazon wasn't as big as it is right now. And it was looked upon as a little more of a negative connotation because of the 3PL, you know, the 3PL sellers and so forth that were selling on the site, driving the retails down. But that's no longer the case. It's kind of flipped now. Now they look at it as, well, this, if they're selling on Amazon, they're selling that many units, that I need to be selling this product.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, look, e-commerce is constantly taking an increasing share of the entire retail market.
Yep.
And also Amazon is without the air travel and automotive. It's like 60% of the online retail. So how can you ignore a market like that? Plus, that's, you know, they want more and more brands to sell on Amazon directly to consumer, because they know that the brands will care about the product, which is what Amazon wants to provide, a good customer experience. If the product quality is good, that's why reviews are key. Okay, so we now have the winning strategy to launch a brand across offline and online channels. So get on Amazon first, build up some traction, and then get into big box stores right after that.
Right.
And then you'll definitely get good results. Okay, so let's now move on to, let's say that we've done this. So yeah, so you launched on Amazon. So tell us some things that you're watching once you launch a brand on Amazon. What are the numbers that you're watching to decide, okay, it's time for us to go to big box retail?
Yeah, we spend a lot of time looking at the numbers every week, and those are the numbers of orders that are being processed every week, our search rankings on the site. We spend a lot of time with PPC campaigns and really trying to help the items rank up on the site. So all those things kind of factor into, you know, is it time yet to kind of go to big box retailers? You know, we're pulling reports every single week, looking at, you know, the retail dollars and the number of units being sold every single week. And as those numbers begin to increase and we get into the hundreds and then into the thousands, then we know we have something, right? And then we know it's time to be able to go to big box.
So weekly sales in dollars and weekly sales in units. That's what you're watching.
Exactly. Yes.
And when is a brand ready to go to big box in terms of those numbers? What are good numbers to watch, to wait?
Yeah. For? So I think when you're selling at least a few hundred units a week, to me, that's an item that is definitely ranking really good and is being want, you know, it has a lot of demand, right? So when you look at that, and then additionally, I look at the reviews, because you want to make sure people are happy after they purchase the item. So 4-star and above reviews is what I'm looking for. You know, anything below that, then we may have a quality problem. There may be something wrong with the item that we may have to work on before I would go to a big box retailer. Because if you go to a big box retailer and the item turns into a disaster from a quality perspective, that's going to cost you thousands and thousands of dollars for a return or just being able to compensate the big box retailer for those problems.
Okay. All right. So weekly unit sales, weekly unit sales in dollars, and also reviews.
And also reviews.
Those are the key. 4 stars and up.
Those are the keys for me. You know, that's you know, at the end of the day, and then, you know, where your placement is, right? You know, the ranking on the site, obviously, which we mentioned.
Yeah.
You know, you end up at the top of the page, you know the people are looking.
So that's what I was going to get to next. So, of course, the weekly sales, units and dollars, they are just the end results of however the operation is being run. So what are some drivers? You know, when I say drivers, I'm looking at what numbers are you watching that are the drivers that will deliver those sales. So can you share with us some?
Well, yeah, so like if I'm looking at PPC campaigns, right, we want to see the average cost of what it takes to gain a sale within that. So if we're keeping the average cost down, and if you're a user on Amazon, you know what I'm talking about. Like, so if you're keeping the average cost, you know, somewhere in 20 to 30% to grab a sale, you're doing very well, right? So the campaign's doing well, but the items are also selling. I mean, the items don't sell by themselves anyway. You know, they need something to drive them to it. But once they people find it, you want the conversion, right? That's the other part of it, right? Is it how many impressions are happening? How many click-throughs are happening? And then finally, how many conversions are happening within those campaigns?
Yeah. So you bring up the next complexity of selling on Amazon, right? So that's the PPC. So if you are, again, when you get to the PPC aspect, you've got two different paths. One is Amazon PPC versus external PPC.
Mm-hmm.
So all of those flow into one place, and that is the product page. So, and on that product page, what matters is, of course, product page receives three types of traffic. It receives the Amazon PPC traffic. So you advertise on PPC as a sponsored product or sponsored display, whatever the case may be. And ultimately you come up in the search result and then bang, people click on it and they land on the product page.
Right.
The second type is you advertise, let's say, on Facebook or on Google or influencers,
right,
whatever the case may be. And then
they
land on the product page. And the third one is organic, because as you rank, you come up, people say, oh, okay, they click on it, they land on the product page. And ultimately, what matters is what that product page is converting. How it's handling all that. So tell us your take on, first, how do you track it? And second, what are you looking to see in terms of numbers? What is a success for you?
Yeah, so with those product pages, so what's important is that content, right? That's a big part of that's going to help to actually convert the sale. So we spend a lot of time on images, on video, on describing in bullet point fashion, you know, what the product is all about. So that after we, you know, that's one of the first things we do, right? After we set up an item on Amazon, that takes about 5 minutes, right? I mean, five, 10 minutes, you got an item up on Amazon. But the real work goes into afterward with the A-plus pages, right? So we want to create these A-plus pages, the best they can look. And then from there, start to market through PPC campaigns, like you mentioned, right? Through Google, through Facebook, and then through Amazon as well. And then organically, that's going to come after anyway. But the conversion factor comes in because of all that work we put into it up front. And then we drive people afterward through the PPC campaigns. In addition to that, we also do work with some of their reviewers using the Vine program. So the Vine program is where you send some samples out to Amazon's reviewers that they have. They review it. You start to get some reviews on the items pretty quickly as well. There's costs involved with all of this stuff, obviously, but that's important. It's a kind of a complete picture, right? Because you want the reviews to start happening pretty quickly on the items.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, the Vine program is very useful. So that's something that Amazon offers. So you don't have to worry about the authenticity of the review or that you don't have to be afraid that Amazon is going to remove those reviews or anything like that. Because Amazon will get the reviews for you. And then you pay Amazon once you get the review. So for new launches, I recommend very highly. It's a great program. So I want to go back to the conversion aspect. So this is obviously key. So since everything is landing on the product page, the higher the conversion rate, the more sales. So is there like a magic number to look for in achieving that conversion rate? What is a good conversion rate for you?
Yeah, I think anything like above like a 5% of versus the number of impressions and click-throughs. You know, once you get them in click-through rate, then the conversion, if you're around 3 to 5% mark, you're doing pretty well, actually, even above that.
Is it on the, this is on the product page or on the search?
Once they're on the product page and they actually make the purchase at that point is what I'm talking about.
All right. So the conversion rate, so Amazon reports this also as unique session percentage.
Right.
Or some people call it as USP. But so that's the number of people that landed on the page versus the number of people bought. Right.
Right.
So that's the conversion rate we're talking about. So, yeah, this is, again, for the listeners' benefit, there really is, it was kind of a, I just wanted to see what your take is in your category. So, because every category has different.
Yeah.
And then there is like an industry standard. If you go online and you look up conversion rate, Amazon conversion rate, you'll pull up numbers, but it's different. So you have to establish. So what I always say is, let's take a stand back and look at it. You have a buyer that looked for a product,
sure,
whether it's advertised or not. They found your product. They came to the page. If your page made a compelling argument with the pictures, the bullets, and the A-plus
right.
pages, then there is no reason for them not to buy. And it's competitively priced, of course, because at the same time, they have multiple tabs open. They're looking at multiple products, right?
So a lot of similar products, too.
Yeah, yeah. So, so what is the right goal for anybody to set? So you know what I always say? 1 out of 3.
Yeah. So that's so just about the percentage that we were talking about anyway, right? So absolutely.
Well, 1 out of 3 is 30%.
Well, that's 30%, yes. Right, right.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm very aggressive. So when I work with my clients, I say, look, guys, you ought to, that's not to say that this is what people get. This is the goal I set. So we have a metric, but we have a tier in rating metrics. So that tier that rates the conversion rate between 35 to 50% average.
That's aggressive. It is definitely aggressive, like you said. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the other thing is, the higher the traffic, the lower the conversion. So that's another fact. So you have to live with it. But if you're getting more and more traffic, even if your conversion rate drops, you're still getting more business. But if you're starting, if you are getting a fairly moderate level traffic to the product page, this is combined, not just PPC, but combined PPC, external, organic, all coming to the page. If you're getting moderate traffic, and you are achieving a low conversion, you start advertising, it's going to go down even further.
Sure.
So that's why I say at the beginning, it's very important to stay close to that composite conversion rate and then, you know, keep building it up. And once you are at a good starting point, then you have, it's like, you know, one of those, in fun fairs and things, you have those eating competitions like a hamburger or sausage eating. You don't go there with a full stomach, right? You go there totally.
That's right.
So it's like that. So if you're going to take on the whole world with advertising your product to the whole world, you better be getting good conversion to start with. And then, you know, you will only go down after that. So there is one other thing. I learned this. This is actually a recent development for the listeners' benefit as we record in October 2022, is Amazon would report that conversion rate as, let's say that somebody came to the page and they bought 2 pieces. They would report your conversion as 200%. So it would be number of pieces divide by number of unique sessions.
So I didn't realize that one. That's a new one to me. I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah.
I learned something new there, Nick. That's for sure.
Well, they changed that now. They changed that now. So now one visitor, one unique session, one purchase, now it's 100%.
Yeah, okay.
So everybody is experiencing their conversion rates drop. And they are like panicking. Oh my God, what happened? Something happened. Guys, don't worry. Nothing happened. It's just yeah. Amazon playing with numbers.
Which they do very well.
Yes. So your conversion rates are still the same, except they are being calculated wrong. They had been calculated incorrectly before. So now they are being reported right. Either way, you have to stay on top of it. But in your tracking, you need to tag this event, that because anything before this, old calculation. So, okay. This is great. So let's talk about a little bit. So obviously you build brands.
Yeah.
And also your approach is build them with big box stores as well as Amazon. Give us your take on the best way to structure a team for a company to be successful, working with a company like you or doing it themselves. What are the roles? Describe a winning team structure for us.
Yeah, so for us, we're a sales and marketing company, right? So we work with the sales side of the business and then the marketing side of the business. So from when we're working with a company, a vendor who's brand new to the market, starting to build out his team, what we suggest and what we say to them is they need to have a good logistical team to be able to work with whatever factories are making their product. They need to be able to work with a very strong, supply chain there. That's one thing. Secondly, as far as the sales side of it, and that where we come in, is they need to have somebody internally that is always working with sales reps like myself and others, constantly kind of giving them their, needs, when it comes to presentation material, when it comes to anything that will help them to sell their product to a buyer, right? And then thirdly is, what is their marketing plan, right? So sales alone or sales team alone isn't going to be able to sell that product, but what are they doing from a marketing perspective? So like for us, if they hired us for marketing, we would help them with like Facebook, we would help them with Instagram, all the social media channels. We would help them with their website. We could help them build their website. We could help them maintain their website and then do all the marketing through their website to their customers as well. Thirdly, we also help with all the advertising on Google advertising and all the click campaigns when it comes to Amazon, but also when it comes to Google and social media as well. So those are things from a social perspective. But on top of that, they should also have a marketing plan in place with PR agencies and so on, because they're also going to help them get their product in publications, on online, certain, online publications, on and on. And so all of those help, right? It's like a combination. You need all of those things together. Logistics, sales, and marketing, they all come together.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is all for the exposure aspect. So
yeah.
So to really put it in a kind of an organizational chart structure. So you're talking about someone for purchasing and fulfillment, logistics aspect of it. So somebody who will handle anything from a sample stage all the way up to shipping and then receiving into inventory to be sent out to either Amazon or to wherever the merchandise is going. So one person for that, and then another one for what I heard you say is really give us all the supporting material. So really, that's content, right? So
that's content.
So that somebody can handle the pictures, the A+ pages, as well as all the collateral material for you guys to go pitch big box stores and somebody like that.
And by to the build way, the A+ pages, right? Build the pages for them on Amazon and other e-commerce sites.
Yeah. So really having your content guy be the resource for supporting someone who's pursuing the big box stores as well as get the online materials together.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then another one is you mentioned all the moving parts of handling online campaigns, PPCs,
right,
on Amazon, external and otherwise.
Right.
And then also another resource for the overall marketing, for whether it's PR or...
That's right.
One of my clients actually does is all these awards, constantly listing yourself for these awards and then ranking on them. You know, so those are very good ways to get exposure. Okay, so this is great. So working with Amazon, by the way, again, for the listeners' benefit, Carlo specializes in making brands successful with big box stores and Amazon at the same time. So his approach is the conventional approach. We want distribution. Amazon is just a distribution channel.
Right.
So he's giving us his take on structuring the team from that standpoint. Right, Carlo?
That's correct. That's correct. And one other thing I would add to that is if they're going to continually build their company, they're going to need new product, right? So having a product development team, you know, whether it's one person, because if they're a small company just starting out, maybe just it's one person that they work with, that person's constantly looking at developing new product to help expand the portfolio. And as the company grows, they should expand that team as well. If they have that in place as well, then you're in a good place, you know, having all those pieces.
Yeah, very important point. You have to keep that product pipeline always busy.
Exactly.
With new ideas.
Right.
And that's where it gets hard, right? Because you don't know what's going to sell. So you have and you always have to be shooting ahead of the target.
Well, generally, companies that start out, they have a good product in mind already, right? They've come up with a product or a set of products, and they've done some research on it already. They know there's some demand for that product, so they start there. Yeah, it coming up with new product beyond that is when it gets to be a little more challenging for a lot of these new companies.
Yeah. That's where things can go wrong. So I had a client, this is way before things happened, but they specialized in air filtration masks. And they sold to woodworkers and, you know, construction workers. And in fact, the company was started by this gentleman. He had four boys, and his boys loved dirt bikes. And then every time he took his boys, you know, going around with these dirt bikes, he would see his boys, you know, with mud in their mouth. So, of course, you know, he thought, you know, you have everything. You have helmets to protect the head. You have all the padding and everything. But there's nothing that protects the face when you're dirt biking.
Right.
So he thought, okay, and he created this mask.
Uh-huh.
So it's also for sports. And before you know it, they're not really business people. They're just a very good entrepreneur, creative guy. And the next thing is they're getting orders from, you know, EMT workers and firefighters, or you name it, woodworkers. And then comes the pandemic.
Uh-huh.
So imagine what happened.
Yeah.
So everybody was looking for some kind of mask.
Sure.
So fast forward now, and of course they did nothing about adding new products.
Yeah.
They had no time, and they started looking at new products recently. Unfortunately, they were struggling. So finding the right product to add to your portfolio, it has to be a good fit. There has to be a demand for it and things like that. So it's...
Well, there's a vision involved too, right? They have to have a vision of, you know, where are we taking this company, right? You know, here's the first 3 years here. We know that this product is going to launch. It's going to take us 3 years to get, like, you know, mass exposure. But then what do we do beyond the 3 years? You know, so they have to really start thinking while they're already in the process of launching their current product line, already thinking about the next product line from there.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the key thing for success, really. And they always ask, you know, if you ask a successful business person, you know, ask one of these big guys or anybody, they will always start with what they envision the end result to be.
Sure.
So, and then work it backwards. So it's always, you have to envision. Everybody thinks, all I want to do is just sell a few products and then make some money. Well, that's not really why you do things. And by the way, that's not how you make money either. Money is a byproduct, right?
So it is a byproduct. Yeah. I mean, a big part of making money and getting off track is the relationships you build with people that you work with. You know, people are what really drives business, right? At the end of the day, it's the people within the organization that you work with that drive the drive the product and so forth.
So this is great, Carlos. So you brought a very different perspective, because we usually talk about Amazon. We talk about all the numbers and PPC.
Sure.
And we, of course, we discussed that. That's part of it. But you took it outside that, and then you brought the big bucks. We never really discussed it as a strategy. So this was great. So let's get to know you a little bit now. So tell us, I'm going to take you way back to where you grew up, because I'd like to know how what we are seeing here today, talking to us, evolved. So where did you grow up?
So I grew up in New Haven, West Haven, Connecticut. You know, my parents were immigrants from Italy, actually. So I'm a first generation Italian American here. And, my dad came over first. He with a couple of his siblings, they bought a house in West Haven. He worked for a while, went back to Italy, got married, and brought my mom over right with him. And then they moved up from there, and they went into Hampden, Connecticut, and then East Haven is really where I spent most of my early childhood years growing up in East Haven, Connecticut, which is by the way 70% Italian. So.
So tell me if this is right. So all these, there's this stand-up comedian, Sebastian.
Sebastian Maniscalco.
So he says, his father being Italian, he says that my father, I'm 8 years old, says, you got to go get a job. Says, is it true that the Italian parents get their kids to start working so early?
Well, they expect a lot in terms of like helping around the house, chores, so forth. You know, you live here, you help, right? You help chores, and they start you young, right, with that. Do they want you to go out and get a job that early? Not 8 years old, but I will say, like, I started with newspaper routes and grass cutting lawns and so forth when I was 12 years old, you know, And then just from there, I never stopped working. You know, I've been working since I was 12, really. And it put a work ethic in me, like, you know, I wouldn't have been able to achieve, I think, if that wasn't instilled early on in my life. And my dad he still is alive, but he's the hardest worker that I know. I mean, he worked construction, he worked odd jobs, he did anything he had to do to help support the family. And my mom equally, too. She's a seamstress, and she worked for factories, but then she worked for, you know, laundromats and cleaners and so forth, and never stopped working, right? She's been working all of her life, and now she's backed off a little bit now. You know, she's 70-something years old, but they, the two of them, you know, two of the hardest people I know that work as
so
hard as they do.
Was it, for you, was it like your dad said, it's time for you to start working now, start with the paper rounds, or was it your decision?
Yeah, you know, he encouraged me for sure to do this, you know, to go ahead and go to work, make some money. He didn't force me to do it, but he definitely highly encouraged me to do it, you know, and then watching him work as hard as he did, it was almost a natural progression for me to go ahead and just jump into it, you know, and that instilled in me as well a passion to want to own my own company at one point in my life. And, you know,
Did he ever start a business, or was he always working?
They did have a business with a partner for a couple of years. They had a catering business. They ultimately ended up splitting apart. You know, the partnership didn't work out with the people they were with. But they did own a business for a couple of years, but ultimately, most of his life he spent working for others, though.
Did he want to be? Did he regret not making that last, or did he have anything like that?
Yeah, he has some regrets for sure. I think with my dad, you know, he didn't have a great command of the English language, right? So he didn't know how to read and write English. You know, he was still very much Italian speaking, and even to this day, I speak to him more in Italian than I do English. So I think that held him back a little bit because he didn't feel like he had good command of the English language. But he has some regrets from it, for sure.
So yeah. How does he feel about you now having your own business?
He's thrilled. Yeah. He always wanted that for me. He actually always kind of tried to push. I have two brothers. He kind of nudged us to always, hey, you should do your own business. That's the way to go. You're going to make a lot more money doing it that way. There's certainly, obviously, I don't have to tell you, Nick, I mean, there's so much involved with owning your own company, responsibility, so it's not as glamorous as it seems initially. You got to have a passion for it. I have a passion for what I'm doing, so I love it, but, people don't realize the work involved, right, that goes into it. Yeah.
Your brothers also have their own businesses?
They don't. They work for other people. I was in business with one of them for a little while. We had a real estate business. We sold that off, and now he's working for somebody at this stage. Yeah.
So you know what I'm. So your dad and your mom and dad, I'm both of them. I mean, this is like you pull up those documentaries from the early days of America, people coming into America. Yeah. And then, doing all these jobs, especially the stories around New York, because a lot of people came to New York.
Right.
So your family story reminds me of those documentaries in black and white. I can almost picture, your mom and dad doing these jobs and then building a family. And then there you are, and now look at you, and you looked up to them. They set an example for you to work hard. And so everything you have. So. Do you think that you wanted to do what your father couldn't do, and that's why you have your business? I mean, do you think that's part of your motivation?
Yeah, I mean, I think some of it to a certain degree. Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I certainly watching him do some of that, he did a lot of construction work. Construction work is hard work, right? And I watched him come home days where he was completely exhausted. And having pains all over his body, right, because of dealing with what he dealt with during the day. So his thing was always, get an education, get your own company. You don't want to do what I'm doing, because you're going to be hurting, And so that kind of motivated me a little more to think about doing my own business and going out and really trying to put something, make something of myself. Anybody could, I guess, work for somebody else, and that's fine if that's for you. But for me, I wanted more than that, right? And I wanted to put something on a map, leave a legacy, a little bit of a legacy behind when I'm no longer here. Yeah.
Yeah, you really, you should be proud. You made your dad proud, I'm sure. So
yeah, they're wonderful parents, and they're still with me today. I'm still happy. I'm happy to. To still be able to share my life with them and watch them. They're givers. They just give and give all day long.
Yeah, I never forget. There is this, I was watching a documentary about New York in general. And then this guy was also just like you, first generation American. And he was Irish American.
Oh, yeah.
So. He was telling the story that his father would he was hurt during the war, so he had a bad knee, and this knee would especially feel very bad during the winter. So, and his father, just like your father, worked in construction.
Yeah.
So, and there were three of them, and he's telling this story that he remembers his father getting up in the morning, early in the morning, and really making like noise that because of his knee hurting, still wouldn't say anything, get dressed and go to work to make a living and come back. So that's the work ethic.
That's that the he work grew ethic. Up with. Yep.
He said, this is what it is. So, you know, it's so easy to take things for granted because America is a great country. But this is how America was built, right? So
that's so, right.
The first generation Americans know this firsthand. Once, you know, it gets passed on, your kids will not know as much as you do.
Not as much. You know, I certainly try to, you know, set an example that, you know, that to show them that, it, you know, you don't get anything free. You have to work. And you have to work hard at it. Yeah. I do the best I can. They'll never know kind of my upbringing, right? I mean, I saw things that they will never be able to, they'll never experience that because it's not possible.
Exactly.
You know, but that being said, you know, I try to instill them what my parents instilled in me as much as possible. And also the essence of family. Family is very important to me. You know, married, I have three kids, and faith is very important to me as well. So all those things, right? You know, to me, it's God, family, business. That's my alignment, you know, and I always, you know, that's what I try to live my life by.
Well, that's the honorable way to live. This was great, Carlos. So give us your contact information. How can people reach you?
The best way is probably my website, www.acgsalesandmarketing.com, or they could even email me directly, carlo@acgsalesandmarketing.com.
That's great. We gave a totally different perspective, so this was great. Thank you for being here.
I appreciate you having me, Nick. It's been a pleasure, for sure.
Thank you. And that brings us to the end of another episode. I'll see you on the next one.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. Be sure and subscribe, rate, and review our show. And be sure and share an episode with a friend. And thank you so much for being with us today. We'll see you next week here on Amazon Legends.